Yeah, so that's the multi-billion dollar question is, what is the future of the language services industry? And I think you have to go back to the definition of language services. What I don't think of it as is a translation business. Translation is part of the product, but what effectively language service providers deliver to their customers is an end result.
The following is our conversation with Alexandra Jarvis, the Chief Strategy Officer at Topan Digital Language TDL, and Christophe Duani, their president. We go over their most recent acquisition of Mainride, an Austrian LSP, and many more details about the inception of TDL and how they have grown over the past few years. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Localization Today. My name is Eddie Arrieta, and I'm the CEO of Multilingual Media. Alex and Christophe, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a morning for us here in Colombia. How are you both doing? Where are you located right now?
Yeah, so I'm in sunny London.
Hello, everyone, and I'm based in Paris.
That is fantastic. And how are the Olympics going? How are you feeling it? Are you feeling it or are you not so happy?
No, very good. Very good. It's a good vibe in the city. It's a good good traction for France as well. We're doing very good. So it's a cherry on top of the cake as well to be there. But yeah, a very good atmosphere in Paris.
Well, we are here today to talk about a recent acquisition by TDL. Alex, you are here to tell us a little bit more about why this strategy is happening. But before we get there, and we'll get to know both of you a little bit more. Alex, where do you come from and how did your role evolve? How did you get to be the Chief Strategy Officer? And then we'll get to know Christophe. I think many, many more in the industry know him, but I'm sure we'll learn something new today. Alex, tell us everything about you.
Yeah, sure. So I've only been in the language services industry since about 2017. And prior to that, I was a equity analyst focusing on technology companies, predominantly in the UK and public markets. So I did that for a very long time, looking at all sorts of businesses, including software, but also semiconductors, you name it, media companies, novel materials, you name it. I sort of covered it. But when I left the city in 2017, I'd been at that point covering a stock called SDL for about a decade. And subsequently, I went to join SDL in a strategy, M&A, and investor relations role. So that was my first exposure to working within a corporate and indeed within the language service industry itself. And I was responsible for strategy across the board, including services strategy, also technology, and then communicating that to the market. And during that time, I did an acquisition of a business called Donnelly Language Solutions, which is where kind of Christophe and I met. Subsequent to working at SDL for 3 years or so, that business was acquired by RWS. And at that point, I left with Christophe to go and set up Topland Digital Language. That's that in a nutshell.
That was a big jump. That was a big jump. So RWS and Topan, and where in the world did Topan started? Was it a conversation? Was it a copy? Was it an email? What was it?
So this was during, frankly, this was in, I suppose, the conversation started during COVID. So that's quite important to understand. And I pretty much literally just had a baby as well, so a few months old. So the sort of plan to go and build a business started really on a WhatsApp message, I suppose, Christophe, and then sort of went from there. Really, we built a lot of the strategy and a lot of the thinking pretty much remotely, and a lot of the foundations of the business were built during that kind of COVID era, really.
That is really great, and I presume, of course, the dynamics of the market and the social dynamics were so different when during the inception of the organization, right? A lot of social distancing going on. And I presume that has been changing since the inception of the company. So it's a COVID company that then becomes an, well, non-COVID, because nobody has COVID. So how has that evolution been? Has things become, I guess, easier, better, more optimistic? And I presume, you know, when you grow up in times of hardships, well, the easy times are really delightful, because you make the most out of those. So, but what has your evolution been as a company since COVID to these days?
I think what I, you know, the feelings that I have is that when you create a company during COVID, it's actually making the company more resilient because of the kind of the market conditions that you build the company on, right? So initially it was also smaller, right? We were not as big as we are now. I mean, already here we are 300 plus employees. So we started really kind of small, the company, right? And I think that having this COVID situation where it was a lot of Zoom, over communicating, I mean, during this period, you really needed to do some over communication, was very important for us to kind of always be online and still try to have a touch point or kind of one meeting once in a while, you know, to kind of see each other. You also filter what you do during this meeting. During the meeting, face-to-face was more towards, you know, kind of the values, towards some of the, you know, what we want to create and some more dynamic question or discussions that was hard to build during online session. Then I think that, like I say, I think it makes a company stronger, more resilient because of the history of where you were created and in the market condition. And then as you grow, it's more important to do face-to-face because you want to carry on to the next level, right? Some of the evolutions that we are doing, you want to have more engagement from people as well towards what needs to be changed. You want to listen more towards the feedback from the people that are on the field, speaking with customers. So it was kind of critical as we grow to kind of have more and more face-to-face meeting in order to increase the engagement of our employees. Same with our clients, right? I think we were one of the first ones that kind of moved forward and decided to go straight into face-to-face meeting with clients to get and extract some values, but also validating the project that we were kind of creating here for TDF.
So we set up the business in the first half of 2021 with just effectively Christoph and I and a small number of people. We then did an acquisition of a business called Global Lexicon, which is UK-based, but with operations in the US and Spain. We acquired that in August 2021. We then did our second acquisition of a business called Translate Media in April 2022. And that business, again, UK-headquartered, but with operations in Hong Kong, China, Poland, predominantly, and a little bit in the US as well. So that gave us a very firm foundation for business already. We then built quite aggressively organically on top of those businesses in terms of sales, technology and operations, and effectively created a third leg to the business really focused on regulated industries. So where we kind of got to by the end of 2023 was a business which was delivering around $40+ million of revenue. A good third of that is fully organic, and the remainder from the two acquisitions. And then going into this year, we looked again for a further acquisition, and that's where we came across Mindrart and completed that in July.
That's great. And I'd love to also hear your perspective and Christoph's perspective on the industry. There you are, coming from COVID, acquiring companies, growing, building different business lines and succeeding on many nations, because it's a multination, and you're completely right, multi-language, multi-nation industry. What is the outlook for industry? What does the industry look like? Do we have a positive outlook for industry? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? What's happening?
Yeah, so that's the multi-billion dollar question is, what is the future of the language services industry? And I think you have to go back to the definition of language services, which really helps you understand the future of the market. So segmentation is really critical. So when we think of the language services market, I think of it as probably about a $20 dollar market. And substantially, I think of it as a business process outsourcing market. What I don't think of it as is a translation business. Translation is part of the product, but what effectively language service providers deliver to their customers is an end result based on, yes, translation, but also project management, document engineering, vendor management, quality management, technology, solution engineering. It's a whole spectrum of services that effectively complete the business process of transforming content into many languages. And it does that as an outsourcer. So when you think of language service providers as that, and not as simple translation agencies or a translation technology, then you understand the potential dynamics of that market a little bit better, where it's more defensive and where it has certain weaknesses. So looking forward, our strategy was really focused on complexity and what we call premium markets. But those premium markets are defined by all of those characteristics that I've just described. The needs of the clients tend to be quite high risk and business critical. So the content itself is high value, and the processes behind those pieces of content are also tend to be quite complicated. So there may be a regulatory element to it, but there could just be a very high volume or lots of different formats, file types. It could be very deep requirements around document engineering. There could be very fast time to market. So it's a business process outsourcing industry in reality. And those complexities are not going to go away anytime soon, even when you throw machine translation at it or ChatGPT at it. That's only solving one small part of the problem, which is the language transformation itself, the translation. AI can be used to help in some of those other parts of the processes, for sure. But it's by no means one silver bullet to solve the whole of language services. So I think as long as you're focused on the more complicated end of the market, and particularly parts of the market driven by regulation, I think there's a strong outlook. In terms of the overall growth of the market, I think the market was down last year. It may well be down again this year. That's really a read through to the end markets. Typically, the language services industry grows in line with the revenue of its end customers. So where you see a pullback in the technology sector or wherever it might be, you will also see a pullback in language services revenues. But within that, there's room for market share growth, and that's where we've been very successful. So our market share gain last year was probably towards 40%. So we grew 36% organically, and the market shrunk, and will again grow at a similar level this year, which I think validates our idea of really focusing in on those more complex parts of the market when other providers may be moving towards more generic solutions, or where smaller providers just don't have the breadth of capability to service those requirements.
Thank you. Christoph.
Let me add a little bit on what I think towards the market. Number one, I will say 3 years ago, because when we started this project 3 years ago, it was a lot of negativity towards creating a new LSPs on the market. I think people were looking at us and saying, guys, this is crowded. I'm not sure what you are doing, or I think it was a lot of negativity. Certain, couple of people as well telling us, listen, I'm not sure this will not be successful. We are going just to replicate some things that you create in the past. It's not going to go anywhere. Well, I think that an important fact today is that after 3 years, we are going to do 60 million, which means that the project is validated, right, from the customer standpoint, because this is being done in only 3 years. I will say the critical aspect to get market share is really the differentiation that you are bringing in the market. And we are bringing the differentiation with our people, number one, which is critical, with the expertise that we are having, the agility as well that we are bringing, and the creativity and innovation, right? I mean, just to make the parallel a little bit here, think about some of the luxury brand that was in the market, right? I mean, you got like this Hermes, LVMH, and at one point you also got Gucci, right? And Gucci was going down, and then they decided to bring the proper, they bring Tom Ford, right, to redesign, they kind of got the pricing level right, and they actually managed to build a sustainable business coming out of nowhere. But what was the critical element of it? The differentiation. And I will say that this is what we do in the marketplace. We differentiate ourselves from the generic players in the marketplace. So we have our own identity, and it's being validated by customer. And like I let's say, it's very important for us to just play on the more complex project in this type of segments that are super high risk as well. And we can add value to the, you know, to the customer. And very important as well, why we are so different, because we really put the client at the heart of everything we do. So it's really about customer centricity, and we create everything based on the customer requirements. So like I said, not generic, but we're able to customize our approach to our customer. And today, this is innovative because you have so many different provider LSPs in the world that try to do the same thing, and actually, you know, no need to do the same thing. Think about in the past about IKEA, right? The furniture industry, it's a very challenging one. But look at IKEA. They actually did something completely different. They took the industry on a completely different angle. So, you know, let's remain humble and with humility. We are not IKEA. We are not Gucci. However, hopefully this is giving you a bit the principle towards what we're building here together.
Thank you for sharing, Christoph, and Alex, also for sharing your thoughts on the industry. I think that gives a huge insight. I think that's going to be very valuable for the listeners. Of course, now we're talking about strategy and the DACH region, and you see growth. And I kind of like half jokingly said initially, like, and you are doing acquisitions. Everyone is like, a lot of companies are complaining that they are not growing, that they can make investments. But here you are acquiring or integrated into your ecosystem, Mainrad. Could you tell us a little bit more about what that means, how it came about, what that means, why is that important, and why did you decide to go into these regulated high-risk content sectors?
Yeah, so from inception, we were focused on what we call regulated industries, and we've got a particular focus on areas like life science and increasingly medical devices, for example. We were introduced to Mainrad about a year ago, and what immediately struck me was the core DNA of the business was very aligned to ours. So real customer centricity, very much a solutions focus, so almost kind of bespoke solutions, very innovative around technology and sort of pushing the barriers and the frontiers on how to use technology, and very keen to do so. Very high levels of customer service, and then alignment around the type of sectors that they were looking at as well. So particularly, for example, they've got one of the ISOs for medical devices. And then the DACH region is a very interesting region. It's quite fragmented in terms of vendors. It's also a market where you really need to have a local presence, sometimes even a hyper-local presence, but you certainly need a German-speaking capability. So all of those things added up to make an interesting acquisition opportunity for us. So right culture, right attitude, and we'd proven through our past two acquisitions that we were able to take businesses and accelerate their growth by investing around them through sales capability, operational capability, and technology. So that's really the core of what we're trying to do with Mainrad, and really so take a jewel of a business and really help put sort of rocket boosters underneath it. That's not mixing too many metaphors. but to really help them grow. So really core to our M&A strategy is important to understand we are a growth-focused business. And when it comes to M&A, we don't buy businesses in order to take synergies. We buy businesses in order to pursue growth and invest in growth.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. That sounds very promising. Christoph, anything you want to add on that? And if you can also add where you are at physically as well as Topen, where else in the world are you at? I think that would be really helpful.
Sure. I think the Mindright acquisition, just to add on what Alex said, very strategic for us. Right now, also acquisitions that Alex did were not opportunistic, but very strategic towards our approach. I will say that with Mindright, we are getting also a very good pool of talents, innovator as well, really focusing on technology. I'm very impressed by the reputation of Mindright in our industry. Mindright equal quality, right? And this means equal Topen as well. High level of customer service plus quality. So a very good fit towards the culture, towards the people, but also towards the ambitions that we have together to provide and to differentiate ourselves, like I say, previously versus others in the market as well. Now, in terms of Topen, we are spread a little bit everywhere in the globe. We can actually follow our clients. We can centralize or decentralize based on the request of the customer. We are in the U.S., in multiple cities in the U.S., East Coast, West Coast, as well in the Middle West in the U.S. We have in Europe different locations. We have Poland, we have France, we have Belgium, we have the U.K., we have Spain. These are the major ones. We're adding now Austria and some other region around for the future. Strong presence in Asia, right? With Tokyo, with Singapore, with Hong Kong, with Beijing as well, and Korea with Seoul, our latest office in Asia. So this is really our global footprint at this point. Just again, want to remind you that 3 years ago we had only one location, and right now we have all these locations. So we are, organized with hub in each continent, and then we have satellite offices as well.
All right, thank you for sharing that, and of course now, you've made some reference to these, Alex and also Christoph. The reputation of Mindright, their level of services, the talent, what they do, aligns, the culture aligns with Topen. This, of course, given the history that you've also shared, Alex, has worked out for you already. You bring growth to the company that's been acquired, and it brings growth to Topen as well. Is there anything you could tell in particular about where you see the growth is going to be for Mindright and Topen? What are some of the things that you see are gonna grow there?
So thinking about the DACH region in particular, we're, I suppose, breaking into two stages. So the first phase is to really help them grow in markets where they're already targeting. So that's particularly engineering, life sciences, and medical devices. So just to really give them the firepower to increase their market share in those sectors, because obviously we're bringing a three continent, if that's the right word, operational platform. So US, Europe, and Asia coverage. So we should give them sort of more operational firepower to win those larger clients in those sectors. So that's sort of phase one. And then phase two will be to expand the number of sectors that they sell into. So bringing our expertise in, for example, financial services, market research, and sort of layer that onto their strategy as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's bringing us, scalability. I think we're able to take some of the Mindright customer and expand them globally, right? And it's allowing us as well, from a TDL standpoint, to use these international clients that want to have kind of a satellite in the DACH region to have this office and this center office over there. So we're able from the Mainrad location to service Germany, to Austria and Switzerland. So very strategic for us, for the customers that we have. So the whole idea is how we can expand share of wallet as well in terms of the existing accounts. Very hard to get new accounts, as we all know, right? Especially when it's an aggressive marketplace like today. But it's what can be done is how can we expand inside existing account as well. So this will help. So this is really adding a key strategic geographical expansion to our existing footprint. And we know as well, right, it is that, this is a hot market. It's a very sizable market in Europe, the DACH region. It's also resonate towards quality again, right? This is really our positioning about, you know, how you can bring quality at a fair price. I mean, clearly, like, you know, everyone wants to hear, but at a fair price, but quality oriented. A bit like Japan, very close also between you know, Japan and this region, very similarity as well.
Excellent. Thank you again, Christoph and Alex. And I have one more question about the transition. And this is already happening. What happens now? You go to the offices. You have an all hands. You have a retreat. What happens? If you can tell us, of course, that'll be super insightful.
Yeah, sure. So it's the fun part after, you know, all of the process of a transaction. So me and Christoph have already been out to Austria, to both their sites there, and spent time answering questions and helping them get to know us. So the first part is the people part. And then the reality is there's a period of learning. So even when you're involved in an M&A transaction, there's still a huge amount to learn afterwards. So there's a sort of period of intense learning and listening for the next sort of 3 to 6 months, where we'll really understand each other's processes and whether that's on sales, operations, technology. And then where it makes sense, we start to align and then integrate. So the first things you integrate would be something like finance and marketing, HR, and some of the IT. But some of the bigger pieces like operations and systems will take a lot longer time, and we're not in any rush. You know, Mainrad is functioning well as a business. We're there to support it, but we're not there to cause any disruption, and that's really critical. So approaching all of these acquisitions with the right growth mindset, with humility, and there'll be some things that we do better and plenty of things that they do better. So yeah, learning phase is part one of the post-acquisition period.
Yeah, and no, I think humility, humbleness, very important about how we can and what we can learn from them. I will say that the time of integration completely changed for the last, you know, couple of years. And I think with Alex, we are taking a different approach towards making sure we are not destroying existing value of the company. So it's really about how we can protect the value of the company, how we can build on the existing foundation from a people standpoint, from a culture standpoint first, right? I think that this is kind of the most important, to look at what kind of opportunity we can have and to go back to the elements that I say about how we can be so successful at this point in the market is a differentiation that we're bringing to the market. And Mainrad is also bringing differentiation. So for us, it's really to understand what are the core differentiations that they are bringing to their customer to add this towards our entire selling point and differentiation as well as TDM.
Great. And actually, I have a final question. Let's say a bonus question. And as I was thinking about it, whenever I hear growth and acquisition, and I think of new functions appearing and new talent needed. So I presume Topan is hiring. And which areas, which functions are you currently hiring for, if you're hiring for? You are looking to add team members to your business. Where are you hiring, if you are?
Yeah, so we're hiring across the business, really. predominantly in operations. The vast majority of our people are in operations, but we're beefing up particularly in the US, for example. And then there are some functions that we're also increasing our focus on. For example, in technology and AI, for example. But yeah, there's always open requests for hire in the business. And we have a really excellent team who goes out and finds talent and develops it. And then the other part of that is obviously making sure that when people join us, that they have a positive experience and you know, receive the support and training they need to develop and flourish as well. But certainly we've gone from pretty much two employees to over 300 in 3 years. So that's been quite a journey.
I can imagine. Christophe, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, we are looking always to expand, but I think the quality of the people and the mindset and the characteristic, the personality of the people matters a lot for us, making sure we're adding the right talent. I mean, we have a couple of, you know, set of criteria as well. And humbleness, humility is one also to carry on the project and to really add value. But I will say just a final note on this. I mean, our team is very diversified as well. Also, it's not only talking about it. So we have, you know, people coming from different horizons. And this mixity in our group is also making us stronger. And we want to continue to build on that.
And just to end, is there anything else you'd like to mention to the industry, to the Mainrad team, to the Toban team, to the community, your clients, anything at all that you'd like to mention?
I think, yeah, for me, I would like first to, you know, to thank, you know, everyone for the support. I think we had a lot of positive vibe in the industry, despite some who were a little bit kind of negative at the beginning. So a lot of help from our colleagues in the industry, a lot of trust from our clients and partner, which was essential for us to kind of build this project. And a warm welcome towards towards the Mainrad employees, but also not forgetting about all the existing TDL employees as well that have been kind of building that with us. So I think it's super exciting to be where we are. We managed to differentiate ourselves. We managed to create a name for ourselves, and we will continue. I will say that this is just the beginning.
And this was our conversation with Alexandra Jarvis, Chief Strategy Officer of Toban Digital Language, TDL, and Christophe Oduani, their president. My name is Eddie Arrieta, CEO here at Multilingual Media. Thanks for listening.